Two sisters lived on separate sides of the states. One in NYC and the other LA. They both moved to Chicago and decided to stay. Now here's their playful podcast packed with Kid Lit Parlay. Children's books.
Are they really that great?
Talking children's books is with Kate and Hughes 8.
Children's books.
Why, what, and how?
Hughes 8 and Kate will break it down for you now.
Hey, Betsy.
Hey, Kate!
Remember last week when we did There's No Such Thing as a Dragon?
My memory hasn't been so short yet that I would forget, so yes, I do recall this.
There was a bread truck that went through the neighborhood, and I was wondering if it was playing a song like an ice cream truck, what would it play?
Right.
And we put it out to the interwebs, and we asked followers on Instagram, like, what song suggestions would you make?
Yeah.
There were the obvious hot cross buns.
Sure, yeah.
But then Clever Rose suggested Biscuits in the Oven, which I've never heard of.
I've never heard that, but I am willing to believe this song exists.
Ursula Murray Husted suggested Bread and Roses by Judy Collins.
Oh, that's classy. I like that.
Jen Krar suggested Baby, I'ma Want You by Bread.
Yeah, I wondered if Bread, the group, was going to come up.
Yep,
all,
and then there was another one by Bread called Truckin' that someone suggested.
Oh,
so
actually, that's... Oh, that might perfect. Be... That might actually be the winner.
Because it's a bread truck.
Yeah.
It's by Bread.
No,
called Truckin'.
When I said it was
do you get it?
The winner,
it's like
that,
really
meant
good.
That meant that I got it.
Yeah.
I think they were all very clever suggestions. I think they are, but the fact that... Did Bread do a song called Truckin'? Because that is way too perfect.
Right?
Okay. All right.
So the winner is, it's H-O-Q-U-E-C. How would you pronounce that?
H-O-Q-U-E-C?
Ho-quick.
Ho-quick. Ho-quick. Well done. Ho-quick. You win our fabulous prize of us mispronouncing your name on our show. So,
yep.
Well done there. And speaking of the show, what show is this?
This is Fuse 8 and Kate.
And I'm Betsy, and you are?
Kate.
Correct. And what do we do on this show?
We discuss children's picture books.
Oh, shoot. Yeah, we do that. And if they are?
Good.
Or?
Bread.
Excellent. What? So, the vernal equinox has equinoxeded with all its equinoxy glory. That's the plural. That's the verb that goes with equinox. One can equinox, right?
What?
I'm just going to go out and equinox for a little while.
Sure.
That's a thing. And
I drank too much. I had one too many equinoxes. And then
that's a noun again. You just went back from the verb to the noun. Anywho, now that it is spring, I felt we should do a springy book.
Oh, yes.
Which can be a little difficult to find, but by a confluence of events, I happened to end up with a rather perfect spring book. So I'm just going to pull that book out.
Okay.
Okay.
Let's see it. Spring has sprungeth. Oh, The Gardener.
By?
Sarah Stewart.
Illustrated by?
David Small.
My buddy, David Small, who did a book with me. This one's got a shiny silver Caldecott Honor.
Sure does.
Sticker on its cover. And a girl, and it's springy.
Okay.
Go read that book.
Okay.
While Kate does her read, let's talk about Sarah Stewart, because we talked about David Small before. We've talked about him a lot. I do believe this is our first Sarah Stewart book. Sarah Stewart married to David Small. What a coincidence that is. I have met her as well. I have been in her gardens. I have seen her many a time, and she was born in Corpus Christi. As it turns out, she was born in Texas, and as a child, her favorite pursuits were digging and daydreaming in her grandmother's gardens, or reading and writing poetry in a large closet in her parents' house. And she loved Blake and Dickinson and Whitman and all that fun stuff. And even after many years in college studying Latin and philosophy and many moves away from Texas, she just loves gardening. She loves gardening, she loves writing. She has beautiful gardens herself that she shares with David in Minden, which she tends to quite regularly. And she has been known to say, "I am still the same daydreamy, shy child who more than anything else wanted to write some sequence of elegant language that would, upon being read, change the world. My own personal experience with Sarah and her writing actually came in the form of her picture book, The Money Tree, which is not actually remembered very well, but I kind of wish they would bring back in print because I feel it has a lot to say about the world in which we live today. But The Gardener, I am happy to say, is still in print, still doing very well. I'm just going to quote what Publishers Weekly said about it. It said, "The Gardener is one cute little multitasking book. Use it when teaching letter writing, the Great Depression, the power of a positive attitude, and the vast impact one small individual can make."
Hello.
Hello.
You read a book?
I did.
The book was read.
It was.
With words. Yeah. Going into your eyeballs and into your brain.
Lots of pictures.
That's how reading works, as I am given to understand
In case the listeners weren't sure.
Yeah, we have a lot of people there who are just not familiar with the concept. So
tell me more about this reading.
Yes. And what these books are. I was just listening to your podcast for your lovely lilting voices.
Said no one ever.
Said no one ever. Yes.
Well, I like how even before you get to the title page, you're already taken to what time period this takes place in because of the cars.
Oh, so yes. So what era would you say this takes place in?
Well, originally, before getting into the story, I thought, oh, it's 1940s and this is a victory garden.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Not the case.
Ah, ha, ha, ha.
Because the story is told through letters.
Yes.
And the letters are dated, and the first date is August 27th, 1935.
Okay, so it's an epistolary picture book to begin with. And,
That's a big word.
I know. I practiced many times before you came back from your read so I would get it just right.
I was going to say this
so
is
so it would just come trippingly off the tongue.
It's just
when
a Great Depression book.
It's also a Great Depression book, yes.
Which makes sense as to why, as we learn in her first letter, that her father has been out of work for a long time. No one's asking her mom to make dresses. And so it's been decided that this girl will move away from her grandmother and her parents and go to live with her uncle in the big city.
Yeah, I'm a little fascinated by this. I assume it's just they can't be watching her. I mean, she would eat much. She's so tiny.
Well, it could be one, it's another mouth to feed.
Yeah.
I imagine maybe there's some mental health issues that maybe they don't want their daughter to see.
That's entirely possible, yeah.
Because as we learn, eventually down the road, Papa doesn't get a job until almost a year later.
Right, right.
So
there'd be some depression probably to contend with as well. Yeah,
I mean, that's just my guess. But so Grandma is helping the girl. Her name is Lydia Grace Finch.
Mm-hmm.
And she is packing up her stuff to go live with her Uncle Jim. And all the illustrations are in what looks like pen, which you don't really see a lot.
No, I would have expected pencil. That's strange. Okay.
So in the beginning of the book, she writes a couple letters to her Uncle Jim, just saying, you know, it's nice to meet you. I'm going to go live with you. Just want you to know. I know a lot about gardening, but I know nothing about baking. I'm anxious to learn how to bake, but are there any places to plant seeds? And I would like to be called Lydia Grace. Fair enough.
I mean, she's very straightforward.
She is.
Yeah, it's very good. I should say, just noticing that with the note about the handwriting with the in pen on the things, when I was writing Long Road to the Circus, I asked David Small if it would be a good idea for him to handwrite a letter that the character writes at one point. And he said, no, when adults try to make their handwriting look like kids' handwriting, it's always a failure. So, no, let's not do that.
Yeah,
and I think probably he made the same decision here.
Yep, yeah, all the letters here are typed.
Yeah, which is fine.
Yeah.
Yes.
She immediately, as soon as she's on the train, she writes a letter to her mother.
Must be bumpy, though.
And her father. And dearest grandma. So
clearly, we know who's the favorite.
She likes her grandma the most, which makes sense if her grandmother was the one helping her pack.
Right. And also, probably was doing most of the childcare.
Yeah, because she was also the one that was bending down to her at the train station when her parents weren't.
Right,
so.
Right.
But it's a little surprising to me, and maybe I just don't know the history of this time period very well, which is probably true. But the train car isn't segregated, which I would have thought it would be in the 1930s.
I'm wondering where she's coming from, partly. If she's coming from
a
less segregated part of the country, they're not saying. It looks, if I had to guess, I'd say she's coming from the Midwest. But I don't know the history of segregation on trains and if even then they would have been. So, yeah, I noticed that as well. But I was like, I'll give them the benefit of the doubt on this one. Yeah.
Yeah, so she gets on the train by herself and you turn the page and it's a wordless, very daunting 2-page spread of the big city train station.
Yeah, I think that would be Penn Station, which got torn down eventually, but it was big and beautiful and overwhelming for quite some time.
It's very dark. There's no color on purpose except for her.
It's her. Yeah. It's a good shot. This might be my favorite shot of the book, yeah.
But now I understand why she was so concerned about baking, because as soon as we see her with her very, what looks like very grumpy uncle, he lives above a bakery, so
that and he is the baker of the bakery. I think it's his bakery.
It is his bakery.
It's funny they don't, the choice not to mention that fact. Like, the first you hear of baking is her letter saying, I don't know much about baking, but they don't say at some point, any point, I know you're a baker. And, you know, it's, I like how the information is parceled out.
Yeah. You kind of learn as you go.
Mm-hmm.
So she immediately gets to the city with her uncle that doesn't smile.
And she's Who does he look like? He looks like someone with a big mustache and it looks like a very grumpy Groucho Marx, but larger.
He's an overweight Groucho Marx. Yes.
Yeah, there you go. Okay. Yeah.
Yep. Who doesn't smile.
Yep.
But she's very optimistic and positive the entire time. She sees that there's window boxes that she's going to plant things in for spring. The sun shines down on the corner where they live and work. So she's got a positive attitude, which is surprising for a girl her age who just traveled by herself away from her folks, probably for the first time, to live with a man that she doesn't know.
She's like Annie.
Well, she's a redhead.
And it's the Depression. And she's staying
but
with...
She's not an orphan.
She's not an orphan, but she is, you know, she's staying with a new male person.
Well, I want you to keep in mind that this illustration of the shot of the bakery for the first time has a bunch of bread in the window, okay?
Mm, okay. All right.
Just hold on to that.
What song would that bread sing?
So 3 months go by, and she writes her next letter, which is kind of a long time to...
Yeah, that's a big... Maybe there were some we just haven't seen them because they were, like, small things. Yeah.
And they were very boring.
And boring. I mean, it's kid writing a letter. It can't be that thrilling.
It's Christmas. She's very thankful that her grandma sent her bulbs. And she says that she wrote a long poem for Uncle Jim. He didn't smile, but I think he liked it. He read it out loud, then put it in his shirt pocket and patted it.
Oh.
So
gestures speak louder than words with this man.
I like the little details in the illustrations, though, like the very old school iron. Mm. The lights that are hanging down don't have like a cover over them.
That's interesting, yeah.
So it's like little details like that that I appreciate.
Mm-hmm.
So then we skip ahead 2 months. It's February, and the bulbs that were sent at Christmas are now blooming. Would flowers really bloom in less than 2 months?
They're like, well, maybe they're paper whites or something. You know how paper whites come up in the winter?
These look like big pink lilies almost.
Oh,
like,
that's like, weird. I don't think a lily would come up. A hyacinth maybe, or
I don't know. I just thought that was weird that within less than 2 months, she's already got blooms.
Maybe
happening.
She has the magic touch, this kid.
She's getting that special
green
soil,
thumb.
you know?
Yeah, that bakery soil.
So here's where it says, I really like Ed and Emma Beach. They're Uncle Jim's friends who work here. So his employees.
Right. Yeah.
And she teaches Emma the Latin words for flowers, and Emma teaches her how to knead bread.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a nice little trade-off.
Yeah, trade-off, back and forth.
P.S. Uncle Jim still isn't smiling, but I'm hoping for a smile soon. Like, like, hang in there, kid.
You just keep dreaming, darling. Yeah.
The next month, she writes a letter that says that she's really busy planting all the seeds in cracked teacups and bent cake pans. But then it says something very concerning to me.
Oh, okay.
And Grandma, you should smell the good dirt I'm bringing home from the vacant lot down the street.
Well, you know.
A vacant lot in what looks like New York City. Yeah. Would you trust what's in that soil, Betsy?
I mean, maybe. I mean, we're talking like, This was a while ago in New York City. He's like, what are we worried about being in there?
1936.
Like, right. So how much, like, I'm thinking of, like, the worst things that could have seeped in, like gasoline or...
Needles.
Were there needles in the 30s? I'm not so sure. Like,
needles?
1930s New York. I don't think there were, like, drug addicts with needles coming out of their arms in the alleyways.
I'm sure in a vacant lot, there's stuff you don't want to touch in the soil.
Maybe. I don't know. I mean... New York was gross, but it also used to have a lot of livestock before that, so maybe the soil in this particular lot is rich. I don't know. I'm willing to give this soil the benefit of the doubt.
I just read that and went, ew.
I mean, it could be ew. We haven't seen the lot. Maybe...
True.
They don't show the lot. Maybe
what
it was a cool
lot.
What
they do show, though, is you turn the page, and she has discovered the roof of the building...
Yeah.
Which presumably shows the potential it has for a garden.
Right.
It's just some skylights and some trash.
I mean,
being
on the roof is cool no matter what, so yeah. I'm all in on the roof here.
But again, another two-page wordless spread.
Yeah, which he's not afraid of doing.
Nope.
Yeah.
Now we're in April, and there's an illustration of the inside of the bakery, which shows... The window that Emma is currently cleaning, there is no bread there in front of the window.
Oh, okay.
So maybe they just kind of decide to shift.
Well, what time of day is it?
It looks like the middle of the day because the sun
right,
so
the bread would have been all sold in the morning, right?
Well, no, there's bread. It's just not in the window like it was before.
Oh, well, maybe because she's cleaning the window and you don't want to get cleaning supplies on the bread.
But it doesn't look like the stand is on wheels or anything. I don't know. I just thought it was weird that they decided to shift this because, hold on.
Okay.
Also,
right.
Meanwhile, why is there a framed picture of the president? Was that a thing back then?
Oh, sure.
Having a framed picture of the president?
I think absolutely. Well, yeah, especially if you were, like, for him. If you'd voted for him. Also, he was president for a freaky long time, so.
Yeah. Well, there he is.
There he is.
In all of his...
Glory. Yeah.
Okay, so now it's May. Again, now we can see from the outside of the bakery.
Uh-huh.
There's no bread showing here.
There's
so,
no bread now.
So we're sticking with the setup that they had in April.
Right.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah, that seems consistent.
And then we turn the page, and we're into June.
Mm.
And Betsy, what do you see in that bakery window?
Nuns! Oh, I'm sorry. Well, I do see nuns, quite frankly. There appears to be bread.
Yeah.
Bread in the window. So
a bit of a continuity error. The bakery used to show all the bread available in the window when she first arrived.
Huh.
Now it doesn't on her May 27th letter, but it's there for her June 27th letter. So
the case of the appearing and disappearing bread stand.
Yeah. It's a little strange.
All right.
But meanwhile, we're learning that everyone calls Lydia Grace the gardener. We learn that she's planting all sorts of stuff everywhere. Emma is helping her with her special project on the roof.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're getting to July 4th, where she's going to... Because the uncle has been unaware of all the stuff happening on the roof. Now it's time to reveal the big surprise. So she's putting up signs, up the stairs, keep going up, please go up.
What month is this?
This is July 4th.
So it's probably pretty hot, and he's going to have to go up all those stairs.
At noon, they close the store, and now she's going to bring him up to the roof. And she says, P.S., I can already imagine Uncle Jim's smile. And you turn the page, and it's another two-page wordless spread of the entire roof full of plants.
Mm-hmm.
There was a bathtub on the roof, and I'm wondering how it got there in the first place. But how did they bring up a table and crates for chairs without him noticing?
I think that'd be easy enough. I mean, if we don't know what's on the upper floors, but if you were like putting, like, if there was like a closet on the other floors, he wouldn't necessarily know you were going up to the roof, right?
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
But they're all standing there on the roof with sparklers. There's a table all set up with a giant watermelon and a baguette. And
that table looks delicious.
And there's
I love that.
Flowers everywhere.
Is
he
smiling?
He's not smiling.
He's not smiling.
No.
He doesn't even crack a grin.
It's,
yeah.
It's more shock than anything.
Yeah.
And then you jump to July 11th. So,
oh, okay. So time has passed.
Yeah. I guess we just don't care about the fact that he didn't smile.
Yeah.
But we learn in this letter that Papa got a job, and so she's coming home. But before she leaves, Uncle Jim had made a cake for her with the most, you know, that was covered in flowers, which is really sweet.
Aww.
And yeah, but this is the best line in the book, and it's the last sentence.
Oh, okay. What is it?
Which is brilliant.
All right.
P.S. Grandma, I've given all of my plants to Emma. I can't wait to help you in your garden again. We gardeners never retire. Mm-hmm. Oh, oh, you move, that's you a move. Good last line.
Yeah, it's a good,
come on. Yeah, and considering the fact that she was almost there for a year, mm-hmm. it's pretty impressive that she stayed positive, even with an uncle who never smiled. Because you turn the page, and they're at the train station. He's still not smiling.
But he's hugging her.
But he's giving her such a heartfelt hug to her at the train station.
Yeah.
It's very
sweet.
Some
people just don't smile. I mean, it's just not their thing. That's not how they...
That's not Uncle Jim's thing.
That's not Uncle Jim. You know, if he were to smile, it would look weird on his face. he would be like, I'm freaked out now. So,
and that's
it. That makes sense. All right. Ratings time.
I think it's a really sweet story. I definitely get the Imogene Antlers vibes coming off
of
this girl.
Yeah, this came out, I think, after Imogene's Antlers. Yeah.
Well, I like the girl's optimism, her persistence.
Her spunk.
Her tenacity. She's not afraid of jumping into a situation that wasn't her choice and leaves the place in a better state than it was before.
Mm-hmm.
I like the diversity of Emma and Ed. I like the fact the uncle never smiles.
Yes, I like that a lot, yeah.
And what a great last line of the book.
Mm-hmm.
But how are you going to compost all these flowers on the roof of a building? And why was there that continuity error
in
the window?
They've got an alleyway, Kate. You can just dump the flowers in the alleyway.
But explain the continuity error.
Oh, I don't even know. I mean, he could be on wheels for all we know. I don't know. Or he has a different unit that is on wheels that he brings in and out depending on how much, you know, what time of day it is.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's possible.
I definitely think it deserved the Caldecott honor, and I gave it a 6.75.
Very nice. Yeah, I'm a big fan of this one. This is peak Stuart Small collaboration. They did many books together, but I feel like this one is maybe my favorite. I'm going to say it. This is my favorite Sarah Stewart and David Small book
Wow.
that they did together. They did others, and I like them. But I mentioned in my behind the scenes thing how much I like the Money Tree back in the day and how I think they should bring that back. But this one's got the heart, you know?
Yeah.
You need the heart. And it's done in epistolary style, which is very clever, particularly because teachers love epistolary picture books.
They what is epistolary?
It's written in letters. The entire plot is written in letters.
Gotcha.
Which is very good because a lot of teachers like to do letter writing units with their kids.
Oh.
So this fits right in there.
Yeah.
Love is art. I love the wordless sequences, the use of color, you know, where you see the roof without the flowers and then you see it with the flowers.
Yeah, the two-page spreads are great.
Yeah. And then you get the emotion through the art, that hug at the end from a guy who's not smiling. I'm a whopping 7.5 on this one.
Well, with our scores combined, it's over 5, so it's a classic.
It's a classic!
Yay!
Woo! Letters time!
Ooh.
All right, first and foremost, I have to tip my hat to author-illustrator Nick Brule. We just did that dragon book, No Such Thing as a Dragon, mm-hmm. by Jack Kent. He immediately informed me that there is a brand new, for adults, Jack Kent biography called Jack Kent, The Wit, Whimsy, and Wisdom of a Comic Storyteller by Paul V. Allen. So if y'all listened to that last episode and were like, Betsy didn't give enough information on the background of Jack Kent, now you can correct that and go find yourself that book yourself, because it's out there.
Nice.
Meanwhile, we got two letters. We got one from Gelsey. She said, I wanted to write to you about your fabulous podcast episode this week on There's No Such Thing as a Dragon.
Aww.
Of course, the most important thing first, I must recommend the Ben and Jerry's Strawberry Shortcake Ice Cream if you need something chocolate-free. I eat the dairy-free kind, but I'm sure the standard is just as good.
I'm glad we're discussing the importance
of ice cream on this podcast.
This
is important. The different flavors of Ben and Jerry's is very important to me.
Okay.
The podcast was especially fun for me as this book has been on my mind recently since Sarah Roman at Book People suggested it as a comparable title to our, she works at a publisher. Ah. Dragon-packed title, There Are No Dragons in This Book, which just came out in March.
Oh.
While this book is a bit of a bait and switch for children, there's no denying the reality of dragons at the end. Illustrator Carla Halsbauer also won the Serafina Award for the book, which was a welcome surprise. Best wishes for a lovely week.
Aw,
now
nice.
That's one, but we got another There's No Such Thing as a Dragon letter, and this one's fascinating. It's from Tony.
Hey, Tony!
Hey, Tony! Tony says, hey, I laughed out loud listening to your recent Fuse 8 and Kate podcast on There's No Such Thing as a Dragon when you, playfully, suggested that the dragon was a metaphor for the father's alcoholism. There's a book published in 2010 or so called The Dragon Who Lives at Our House by Elaine Palmore, illustrated by Norris Hall, which is about a dad with a very visible dragon named Al, of course. It's pretty messagey, but not a bad book. Bibliotherapeutically, is that a word? Should be. So enjoy the podcast. Thanks, Tony. Grown-up things we like.
Well, this weekend was the penguinologist's 40th birthday.
Happy 40th birthday, penguinologist!
And it was over, he's born on St. Patrick's Day, so the day before we did the Green River Dying. Mm-hmm. We did
Chicago.
We did the, the traditional Irish food. Mm-hmm. We did the parade. A corned beef sandwich, of course.
Damn right, okay, good.
And, we did all that stuff. And then on Sunday, we went to medieval times.
Yes, we did.
And he dressed up, I dressed up, and our friend Flory, she dressed up as a green fairy. And we all went to medieval times, and boy, did we have a good time.
We did have a good time. We had an excellent time. We had front row seats, because you'd gotten those VIP seats. And,
yeah.
And we had half a chicken.
Yeah, and our night won.
Our night won.
And your daughter got the...
His standard, yes.
From the Lance?
From the Lance, no less.
I got a flower.
Everybody had a good time.
It was great. Yeah. I surprised Drew with a knighting.
Yes, you did. And it was a very nice knighting.
His costume was as good as the Queen's.
His costume was just as good as anybody's costume there.
So
you would have thought he was one of the cast.
Yeah. If you need a place to go on St. Patrick's Day that isn't a bar, go to medieval times.
Yeah, there's plenty of beer. So
entertaining and
I had never been there. My only association with it had been from the movie The Cable Guy, which is not the most positive portrayal of it, I will say. So
it's
yeah.
fun for the whole family.
It was great. Yeah. So well done there. Mine is, did you watch the Oscars this year?
Sure did.
Okay. Do you remember there was a guy, there was a comedian by the name of John Mulaney, who got up at one point and started going off on this tangent about Field of Dreams.
Yes.
It was so well done. I was like, who the heck is this guy? I've never heard of this guy.
He's a comedian.
And I'd never seen any of his shows. So Matt was like, well, let's watch one of his shows. So we watched Kid Gorgeous at Radio City. The man is so good at what he does. It is, wow. It is a really good, really hilarious comedy show. He is so perfect. You can't practically even hear him breathe. He just gives the lines absolutely perfectly. The jokes flow together with great ease. I mean, it's a work of art just watching the man do his jokes. I have not seen his more recent ones, but I highly recommend going to the old Netflix and seeing Kid Gorgeous at Radio City, because it's a delight.
Yeah, he used to be a writer on Saturday Night Live. There was a little bit of some drama regarding when he divorced his wife and when he started dating Olivia Munn, but...
Well, I also believe he sort of relapsed on the old drugs there as
sure
well,
did.
Somewhere in there. Yeah, yeah. So yeah, this was, the special is before the divorce and the drug relapse and the Olivia Munn and the kid he would have. But so I have not seen any of his more contemporary stuff, but for that one... It's a hoot. Yeah. I just adored it. So,
all right. Yay. Well, do we get more spring books now?
Maybe. I have a very special cult classic book coming to me right now. And in a weird coincidence, I had a coworker literally call me today asking me about this controversial book. And I was like, I'm literally have that on hold and coming to me from another library. I'm going to do it on my podcast. It was a weird coincidence. He just happened to bring up this very book.
A controversial cult classic.
A controversial cult classic that there are still copies in libraries around the country, but boy, if those book banners ever got even a whiff of it, they would lose their minds.
So tune in next week for the controversial cult classic.
Yes, and I'm not going to tell you what it is. You're going to have to listen.
All right.
And until then, I've been Betsy.
I'm Kate.
Bye. Fuse 8 and Kate is a Fuse Number 8 production. You can reach us at FuseKate8@gmail.com. You can follow our podcast on Twitter at Fuse_Kate. You can follow us on Instagram, Threads, and Blue Sky at Fuse8Kate. That's Fuse8Kate. Listen to us on Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play, Audible, Amazon Music, or Player FM. Or follow us on iTunes and rate our podcast if you're so inclined. Our music is by Haddon Keim, our logo is by Andrea Cerumi, and our benevolent overlord is Drew Atienza. Fuse 8 and Kate is a creation of Kate Atienza and Betsy Bird.